And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, let's line it up here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. 2022 NFL Draft. Just over 24 hours away. What are we at here? We're about 35 hours away. This is exciting.
He Baba Dewey. Let's go.
He Baba Dewey indeed, Steve. Got some NFL news and notes to pass along to you. But before we do that, this just in to the Weather Center here at One Bills Drive. It has stopped snowing. I'm happy to report. I woke up to snow on the roof of my patio. Yeah. Which is off of my guest bedroom in the back of my home. I'm walking down the hallway in the morning. You know, I look outside. Yeah. I was like, what is that white stuff on my patio roof? Oh, dear. The forecast proved true. We have measurable snowfall on April 27th.
There's
a look at the stadium for our MSG viewers.
Yeah, I was a hair nauseous this morning.
Now, the ground is too, outside of, you know, the grass or the lawn, the cement and the streets are too warm.
Yeah, it'll be back
from the weather we had just the other day for it to accumulate there.
It'll be cleared up tomorrow, but still. Come on.
This is, so I decided to wear my Arctic Bills gear today, which is, I'm wearing a white top, with the Bills logo on it, and, thought that was rather appropriate. For today, in light of the weather we did receive, we will remain resolute and hardy in our belief that things will get better and then stay that way without any more winter reprisals as we witnessed overnight.
Right. Yeah. That
totally unnecessary. Yeah. This is how I know God has a sense of humor, or at least Mother Nature. When we get toyed with like this.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, last weekend was a huge pump fake. And
the second pump fake,
yes,
by the way.
And so we'll see if... You know,
I'm hoping there's only two.
Summer's actually on the docket now going forward, which it looks like it's going to be. So here we go. But
yeah.
Rough one this morning, no question.
That's right. We had some interesting stories as we get closer and closer to the draft. And some of ESPN's insiders, Dan Graziano, Jeremy Fowler, I know you gave this a read today. Some of the things they're hearing based on the phone calls they've made over the last few days pertaining to the draft. Essentially, at number one, the general talk is that the Jaguars are still considering Aiden Hutchinson, Evan Neal, and Ikeokwanu, but that Trayvon Walker might, in fact, be the pick, the traits player at number one over the guy with the bigger body of work in Aiden Hutchinson. So we'll have to see what comes back there. Derek Stingley Jr., who didn't have a good season on the field since 2019, had a monster pro day workout, reportedly killed the interviews with NFL teams, and is now being considered as a top 10 pick. There are some that are saying he may even go before Sauce Gardner, which is saying something.
We'll see. The thing with the Jaguars, nobody really is sure what they're going to do at number one. Plus, they just – and people have been thinking they're going to take Evan Neal, one of the offensive tackles. So they just extended today their left tackle that they've got on the roster, Cam Robinson.
Right.
So he's extended. So that kind of cools their – wouldn't that kind of cool your Jets on taking Evan Neal?
Yes. Talk all along is they're going to take a pass rusher
to
pair with Josh Allen.
And lately that we've been hearing that, hey, Evan Neal, they may take an offensive lineman, you know, give Trevor Lawrence a little bit more protection. A couple of bookends. And maybe they will. And that they get a cheap tackle as a rookie to go along with their – franchise left tackle or move their franchise left tackle to right tackle and put the rookie, whatever.
Yeah.
But that's, you got to keep an eye on that stuff too, because these teams continue to sign players and extend players right up until the last moment.
Yeah. There is talk that the Packers, who we know need weapons for Aaron Rodgers after trading away Devontae Adams and losing Marquez Valdez-Scantling in free agency to the Chiefs, will be looking to reload at the receiver position or a tight end, who knows. And there is a lot of talk, excuse me, that they're considering day two receiver Tyquan Thornton, the guy that blew it up at the combine, ran like a 4.28 out of Baylor. He's a day two prospect. The question is, do they go receiver and really load up on offense? It's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, think about this. They traded away Adams. They did not re-sign Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Those are two of your top three wideouts. You got some holes to fill.
They could go wideout. They've never, the big story, of course, is that they've never taken a first-round wide receiver when they've got Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Never done it. They've done it a couple of times in the second round. Right. Jordy Nelson and, of course, Devontae Adams.
Which is why people
are
talking about.
And they hit home runs with those guys.
And that's why people are talking about Tyquan Thornton.
Right.
As a possibility on day two.
And maybe they will. And Aaron's going to get the most out of whoever they get, no question. I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe they try and make a statement. This is Aaron Rodgers. He signed an extension, so they got him for a while. Maybe they're going to try and load up and give him everything he wants in these last couple of years of his career instead of doing it some other way. Yeah, there's no telling. And I'll say this, too. They draft far enough down that you can kind of like they're going to have to – things are going to have to fall their way to get it exactly the way they want it anyway. Just like the Bills at 25.
Georgia wide receiver George Pickens, who we've talked about a lot on this show, may not even last until round two. There were some callers that we've had over the last couple of weeks saying, hey, can we get a guy like that in round two at 57? I didn't think so. I thought he'd be in the top 10 picks of round two. Now they're talking about him rising into the late first round.
Yeah.
There's a wide range of opinion on Pickens. For a couple of reasons. Some of his off-the-field concerns. Some people are wondering, hey, is this guy a hothead? Has he matured? He got thrown out of a game for fighting once. It's a one-time thing, so I think it's somewhat overblown. And maybe people are trying to throw others off the scent on Pickens. But 6'3", 195. And Pickens said he believes his range is 25 to 45. Interesting that he picked pick 25.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. What do we think of that?
Yeah, that's the Bills' pick, yeah. And it could be. He's one of those guys, and you tell him he's that. He's an attitude guy. I haven't seen the Bills take a guy like that since they took Eric Moulds.
Yeah.
Moulds was
the 24th pick.
Eric was just he's a bad to the bone. He was a great dude and a great teammate, and he never a problem or anything like that. But he slapped the taste out of a DB's mouth. He would absolutely bust him in the jaw.
Yeah.
And he was a great dude to have on your team, man. Are you kidding? The guy had a Hall of Fame talent and ability and was, he got drafted by the Bills. What can you say? At the beginning of the drought. So that's what I see in this Pickens kid. If he can, he's that kind of player. He's an Eric Moulds type of level of talent, but he's got a little bit too much of the grit in him for a lot of people. They think, he's going to be one of those guys. All of a sudden, you turn around and there's a fight in the locker room. What's going on? Well, he's in the middle of it. Or there's going to be something where.
Well, there's an injury
head
history.
Head coach, yes, there's an injury history. And also, GM gets a call from the local police at 1 a.m. Oh, gosh.
I don't know that he's got those kinds of off the field problems.
Don't know.
I think people are genuinely wondering, can he keep his emotions in check?
Like I'm doing, hammerheads like me. People jump to conclusions about the kid.
Yeah.
They go, oh, he's one of those. But you know what? The club's going there and sit down and talk.
Yeah, they do their homework.
They look him in the eye and say, okay, what about it? What do you got to say? And they let the kid talk. So if you take him, it's because you've looked him in the eye and you like what you see. And there's a lot there to like.
Yeah.
There's a lot there to like. And he has not been shy about answering for what happened to him in his career. There's almost so much you can answer for him. I mean, the guy had an ACL. But I'll tell you this. He came back quick from the ACL and was a difference maker.
And I give him credit.
He is an animal.
I give him credit for playing in their last four games.
Yes.
He could have sat and said, hey, man, I got to take care of my draft stock.
He
went back to his team.
He showed a ton of heart. A ton of heart and a ton of character in doing that. And I got to clap my hands for him. And I'll say this. They take him. I'm going to like it.
I'm good.
I'm going to like that. If they get him at 25, I'm all about it. That guy can go.
Yeah.
That guy can
runs in the 4.4s. He's one of the only receivers over 6'1", you know, running in the 4.4s. Most of the super speed guys in this draft are below that height. And this is a quote that really caught my eye. Jeremy Fowler talked to him on the phone, and he says, Pickens believes he has matured since the well-publicized fight with a Georgia Tech player in the end zone that got him thrown out of that game. Quote, this is from Pickens, the internet can portray you in different ways, but seeing me in a different light, I believe teams were pleasantly surprised in the interview settings. A lot of teams wanted to get to know me personally, so I took a few business trips and believe they saw that side of me, a mature side. So we'll see. We'll see if he improved his draft stock by coming across favorably to teams that really want to know, hey, are you going to be getting kicked out of games because you're a hothead? Or, you know, I mean, it was the same thing with Richie Incognito when he came out.
That's
remember
right.
that?
That's right.
He was getting he got kicked out of five games.
Well, and Bills fans of a certain vintage remember the guy Brian Cox from the Dolphins. Yeah. That guy was getting tossed every other week for a stretch of games during the 91, 92 season, somewhere in there, 93 seasons. He was getting tossed every other week. I mean, literally tossed out of the game because he was fighting.
Yeah, ejected.
And you know, one of our guys used to, like, bait him into doing it.
So you know Pickens, with this history, is going to be a target as a rookie.
Yeah, they'll see what he's got.
Oh, they'll get all up in his grill and start talking trash to him.
But it's a concern. You got to have a guy that's going to be able to line up every week, and he's not going to be ineligible, you know? Like, you know, like he didn't get good enough grades or something. Yeah. You got to have the guy's got to be available every week, both with injury and with his character and his off-the-field life. He's either got to have a support system in hand when his family, his friends, or whoever lives with him and keeps him upright and keeps him out of that. Or, like every other guy does, or it's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It's a famous thing we all see in pro sports and in college sports, too. The guy can really play.
Yeah.
But he's got some issues. So many of the issues are you going to be able to – and a place like Buffalo with McDermott, with Steph Diggs in the room, Gabe Davis in the room, with all these guys in the room who've been there who say, hey, bro, listen, take a chill, let's go, and get his mind right week to week and help him, you know, and lead the guy into a great player. He'll take it over on his own sooner or later. Yeah. He'll be good. And if you've got that kind of culture that can absorb that kind of guy and make him better and get the most out of him, oh, my gosh. You can't afford not to pick a guy like that.
One of Pickens' former Georgia teammates who transferred to Florida State to get more time on the field, looks like that was a great decision for him, Jermaine Johnson, is now being talked about as a top 10 pick. He's one of the pass rushers in this draft. A lot of people thought he was going to be the fourth or fifth pass rusher off the board, down in the teens somewhere. Now people are talking about him as a top 10 selection. One NFL coordinator called him the most polished pass rusher in the entire class. They're thinking the Jets might look at him at 10. He is long, strong, and effective. His length is what I think helps him more than anything, because he gets into those tackles and guards and he gets his hands on them first, and that's half the battle sometimes. So it'll be interesting to see where he comes off the board. There's been a lot of talk about what the Giants are going to do at 5 and 7. The general consensus is offensive tackle at 5 and then try to trade out at 7 and accumulate more draft capital, if not this year, an extra one next year. So we'll see if Joe Schoen can pull something like that off. But right now the early buzz is there ain't nobody really wants to get into the top 10.
Yeah.
It costs a premium, and you don't have true elite prospects this year.
Right, and there's plenty of value dropping down from that from the top 10. Plenty of value, plenty of guys you can get. There's going to be a stretch, and it looks like to me, Brownie, see if you agree, outside the top 10 or in the top 10, between draft number 10 and number 32, it's like, you can justify just about a lot of guys.
Yeah, relatively
more than 22 guys. And certainly that's true. We know that's true from the Bills' 25th pick all the way through the end of the second round and probably in the early third.
Maybe,
there's going to be a ton of
75.
Right. There's going to be a ton of people. There are people that are, yeah, okay. So I had this guy a little lower. This guy, you know, you'll get wide variety of opinions. So it's not going to be hard to justify whoever you pick in the first four rounds of this draft because of the disparity of opinions, much more so than years past.
There's a belief that a main pivot point in round one could happen at pick nine with Seattle.
Right, Seattle.
So
Seattle needs a quarterback, or they're thinking they do.
Right. But if no quarterbacks are off the board, do they feel they can slide back a couple of picks, get some more draft capital, and still get a quarterback that they want? You're always playing. You're playing risk right there.
Do you think Seattle sees Malik Willis as a perfect replacement for Russ Wilson?
Same
six
height.
6 foot, athletic,
yeah.
Poised leader, got some production in college.
He did not play in a pro-style offense.
Right. And
Russell Wilson played in two of them because he played at NC State and then transferred.
To Wisconsin, yeah.
Transferred to Wisconsin in August. He learned that offensive system in a month up at Wisconsin, a pro-style
right.
system. And took the team to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, that was impressive.
Yeah, he went from the
1 month
he
prep.
Went from like three deep in the depth chart to starting Rose Bowl. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So I don't know if Malik Willis has those credentials.
I've read some things where a lot of scouts and people in the NFL think that Malik Willis's offense was a big problem for him.
It was too simple.
It was
one read, and if you don't see anything, go run and make something happen.
You know, tuck it up and go. And so it's not really, it wasn't really a highly developed offensive scheme, and they really didn't ask too much from him except just be yourself, go out there and play. Now that can be seen of both ways. One is a strike against Malik, and it's also a strike in his favor. Listen, they didn't give him much to work with, or two, they didn't give him much to work with because they didn't think he could handle it or he couldn't handle it. But the guy's really the best physically prepared quarterback in this draft to me. He's got the biggest arm, the biggest pro arm, and he's also the athletic player that you need. So toolsy-wise, he's probably the number one guy in the draft.
One of the biggest enigmas for night one figures to be Georgia linebacker N'Kobe Dean.
Right.
Fantastic off-the-charts football instincts in terms of reading offenses, knowing what's coming, etc. But he's undersized. He's 5'11", 229, and he doesn't have elite speed. So if you're undersized and you're not fast, I think that's going to be a tough thing for a lot of NFL GMs to work around and still justify investing a high draft choice in him. So there are some that apparently love him and some that wouldn't even take him in the first round.
He is really smart, learned the playbook quick. But he played on a defense surrounded by first-round draft picks. I mean, everywhere. I mean, he was...
Well, linemen rarely got to him at the second level because the defensive line was so good that you'd hold everybody up.
There were plays when he could have been playing against air.
So he could just run and
hit. All the way to the ball. So I don't know what kind of physicality he's going to bring to the table because he's little. Even by my standards, he's little at linebacker. He's not quite Sam Mills. But that's what you're looking at. Sam Mills and London Fletcher kind of guy.
And he's not thick.
Now, those guys are great players. But he weighs 225, 220. So
that's going to be tough.
I have some real issues. Not that he's not smart. He's a really smart guy, but he's little and he's not very fast.
He didn't test. Nobody's got an official time on him either.
He can't run. He plays good, but he can't run. And I get it. You know, hey, look at the tape. It doesn't lie. Okay, fine. Let's put him on Vanderbilt's defense to see how good he plays.
Yeah. The most interesting tidbit from Jeremy Fowler and Dan Graziano of ESPN were the names that scouts are higher on than you might think, like guys that could go earlier than you're thinking.
Right.
Kyler Gordon, the Washington corner, after he ran a 4.52, a lot of people feel, oh, he's not even going to be a first-round pick. There's a chance he could still be. Oklahoma linebacker Brian Asamoah, who we talked to Greg Cosell about, and, you know, again, another undersized player, but this guy's got speed. unlike N'Kobe Dean. Georgia linebacker Quay Walker, who has all the measurables in the world that you could want. I mean, he might be the closest thing in this draft to Tremaine Edmonds in terms of pure measurables. But the knock on him is instincts. Ohio State tight end Jeremy Ruckert, Long Island native, so I'm a little partial there, but nice player. The only problem with his tape is they never had him work the seam. Everything is underneath and intermediate. There's no, like, they don't have him pushing the seam up the field. So people are wondering, like, can he do that? They haven't seen him do it, so there's no way to know.
Right.
Memphis receiver Calvin Austin III only goes about 5'7", but, I mean, he is quick as a hiccup. 4.32 in the 40. Kid can fly. He just outruns angles.
Right.
Impressive. Western Kentucky edge rusher D'Angelo Malone. Probably a day two, day three guy. Central Michigan offensive tackle Luke Gadecki, who projects to guard. Might be one of the first two or three guards off the board. Virginia tight end Jelani Woods, Steve.
Okay.
The behemoth.
So
6'7".
All right, so Brownie gets on this rant this morning. We're getting ready for the show, and I hear him over there. He's hooting and hollering at his computer. He's watching this Jelani Woods highlight tape. And I'm like, what? Let me see. This guy looks like a 15-year-old kid playing with a bunch of 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like head and shoulders taller than anybody on the field, and he is just like rocking people. Catching, he's a good athlete.
He's very raw.
He's yeah, but he also has some great body control, catches the ball really well.
For a 6'7" dude.
He's a 6'7", yeah. So he's a big dude. Now, he's got some traits. He looks to me like he's a completely natural athlete.
Hasn't spent a lot of time in the weight room.
Right. It looks like he just walked off the street. He doesn't have he doesn't have the arms and the muscle definition and all that stuff, going for him. But he's a big dude.
You get him in an NFL offseason program, though, and watch what happens.
Well, I want to know why he needs to get an NFL offseason program. Why he isn't doing at Virginia or whatever it is.
But if you believe in his upside, you're thinking, a year from now. I mean, I was telling you the other day, I walked down the hall last week, and I saw Greg Rousseau. You want to talk about a physical transformation.
He's big. He's gained some weight.
Like, through the chest and the shoulders? Holy cow, he doesn't even look like the same guy. I mean, he looks like a pterodactyl. He's just...
It's unbelievable.
He's like a condor with muscles. It's crazy.
The transformation
from that's one offseason in an NFL program.
Right.
He is jacked. I would guess, if I had to guess, I would say he put on between 10 to 12 pounds of lean muscle. He is...
I'll bet it's
more
than that.
He is jacked right now.
I'll bet it's more than that.
Maybe. Might be 15 pounds.
Because he's so tall, to get that kind of difference, it's more weight.
He's got to be eating like 10,000 calories a day, right?
These guys, they wake up to eat. So, and I was checking it out, too. I saw O.J. Howard today, and I saw Tim Settle, too. And I was like, I'll say this. We've gone the entire full circle, you and I, over the course of our time here. We've both been here a couple of decades at least, right? This team, they got some traits.
Yeah,
they got guys who walk off the bus and you're like going, oh, God. Look at that. Who is that guy?
Well,
they're unbelievable. They're head turners, these guys.
Yeah, great. That's exactly what I did. Greg walked by. I looked up at him. I was like, because he had a tank top on. Cut-off sleeves.
Yeah.
So the guns were out. And I walked by. I, saw his arms. I was like, those didn't look like that last year. And then as he passed me, I turned around again. I was like, did I see that right?
It's amazing,
He is huge.
So
right
they, you know, they, like, well, you expect it, though. They're a team that's favored by a lot of people to win the Super Bowl. They're favored to win the Super Bowl. People are looking at this team like, oh, my gosh. They saw the way they finished the season last year where everybody was screaming about the overtime rules being changed because they lost the coin flip. Unbelievable.
But that's...
that's the way they should look. And, do they fill the bill.
And, again, that's an example of finding a guy with Bill's DNA, a guy that's going to put the work in the offseason to make that transformation, to make himself a better player on the
field.
That's
why I'm saying this guy Woods, he's a pretty good player and all that, but...
Yeah, does he have the character makeup to get in
right,
the gym?
Is it his thing, you know, or is it going to be one of those guys you have to like?
Yeah. Has he just been good because he's been big in every level of football?
You got
he's
somebody
played?
On your training staff that all they do is they meet him at the door in the morning and they're on him all day. Let's go, let's go, let's go.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that's a crusher if you got to do that.
We've got a fun show for you today. Coming up in about 7 or 8 minutes, we will have Gabriel Davis joining us here on the show, as he is part of the subjects covered in the latest embedded edition. Our staff over at PSE puts that series together, and the latest one is being released tonight. And Gabriel Davis was one of the subjects that they followed around down in his off-season home in Sanford, Florida. They got him on the fishing boat and everything, so I got to talk to him about fishing. He had a largemouth bass on his line, and he lost him. His buddy caught a big one.
Might have been a gator on.
Well, yeah, it's possible. But we'll check in with Gabe.
He's living with his trainer.
Yeah,
the two of them, the guys there. So they got his
trainer's pretty good fisherman.
They're shooting the jugs machine out of the garage.
Oh yeah,
he's got his Frenchie bulldog there with him watching him.
That's right. Yeah, and he also gives a lot of crap to Isaiah McKenzie on the phone because he's trying to talk him into coming up to Central Florida from South Florida to train with him for a few days. He said he's got a house for him and everything.
Right.
And Isaiah never commits. It's pretty fun. It's kind of funny, the ongoing dialogue between those two that you see them having over the phone. So we'll talk to Gabe about that in about 5 to 8 minutes. Second hour of the show, it is the Mock Draft Watch finale. Our colleague, Bills reporter Matty Glab, has been hard at work compiling every mock draft under the sun with any measure or shred of credibility. And she has compiled the final tallies as to the most popular picks for the Bills, the most popular position picks for the Bills. We've sliced it and diced it every which way you can imagine. Maddie will be here to break that all down for us in the second hour of the show. So we look forward to those two conversations coming up. Laramie Tunsil, Steve, has officially jumped the shark.
Good for him.
I give him credit.
I do,
this
too.
This is creative.
It's great.
So he tweeted earlier today, "For the past 6 years, I've been asked about this moment, the gas mask." We all know what we're talking about here. When he got drafted 6 years ago, video surfaced right before, around his time on the clock when he was going to get drafted. It was right before the draft started, I want to say.
It was.
Somebody released a video of him in a gas mask, smoking pot and basically holding it inside the gas mask.
Right.
For a better high, I can only assume. So he says, "I spent 6 years trying to do rather than say on the field and off the field. I spoke with this podcast for the first time about this moment. And today, the day before draft day, I'm officially moving on and putting this moment in the past. I'm minting a one-of-one NFT of the infamous gas mask video to be listed. A portion of the proceeds will benefit Last Prisoner PRJ, which supports those incarcerated for cannabis offenses." And for those of you that don't know what NFTs are, they're these non-fungible tokens that are sold online to interested buyers, and then they own the rights to that NFT. So the video is the NFT that someone would be purchasing, and there is only one. So he's trying to raise money for a cause that's near and dear to him. It's a little bit ironic.
Good for him, though.
But, hey, talk about turning a negative into a positive, right?
We've been saying it. I mean, it's going to be – it'll probably happen. Something's going to come out at the 11th hour about somebody in the top five, top ten of this draft.
Josh Allen had it happen to him.
That's right. Laramie Tunsil, Josh Allen – and some, you know, Anthony Dixon, the running back from Cincinnati, who the video came out of him in the altercation with a female.
Joe Mixon. That's who you're thinking of.
Joe Mixon.
Oklahoma, he was.
And, you know, things like that. And the timing of it is not random. So.
Yeah, somebody's got an axe to grind.
So it we're just sitting here, you know, on the day before, what'll happen? What happens when who's it going to be? Which guy of this group is going to have this pop up in their life? Whatever issue it may be, that sheds a bad light on who they are as a person. It'll be interesting to see if it happens this year. Certainly, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen, but people think they can get something out of it for some reason.
Yeah, we shall see.
But it'll happen. You know it will.
To somebody, somewhere, yeah.
Yeah.
Because somebody's got an axe to... Oh, somebody's always got an axe to grind. Yes. I've been wronged. yeah. And people feel they got to take some kind of retribution of some kind. All right. We got to take a break here. When we return, we hope to have Gabriel Davis with us.
Yeah. He's in and around the building. We got to go round him up, and he'll drop by and see if we can get him
in. We will try to find him, throw a net over him, and get him in here as we discuss the latest edition, the latest episode of Buffalo Bills Embedded. It's titled Reset, Refocus, Respond. So we'll talk more about that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Since you ain't send me none, you ain't send me none, idiot. You just say stuff just to say it.
I do.
I'm kind of glad we don't have yours because this one's probably better anyway. You guys have the top barbecue.
Yeah, barbecue, but it's just not that good.
You have the top barbecue restaurant, and you're the only barbecue restaurant in Miami. How long do you work out for? 30 minutes?
20
minutes. Yeah.
Ask them how many times I worked out.
Coaching girls flag football isn't working out.
You can't keep up with me if we were working out together anyway.
Ask me how many times I worked out.
Are you coming up here?
No.
I got obligations.
No, you don't.
But I'm about to go because you're annoying me and boring me already, so.
Yeah. That is just a small excerpt of the back and forth jovial nature that exists. I mean, that's a snapshot of the receiver room, huh, Gabe? Does some of that stuff go on all the time here at the facility, too? I would imagine it does because Isaiah never shuts up, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
welcome in, by the way.
Yeah, we had Coach McDermott come into our meeting, and we had some good stories going on for the past 5 minutes of our meeting. So yeah. Coach McDermott definitely knows how the receiver room
is. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's this embed is about the off season that you guys spent. They spent some time with you and obviously Isaiah and other guys as well. What's different about your off seasons now than it has been? What are we going to see in this embedded?
You know, just see the way we live our lives, as players. You know, everybody sees us on Sunday and you know, what you see on the social media page when the season's going, but you know, we live normal lives and do normal things and, have similar hobbies to a lot of the people that watch us and kind of just wanted to show them the other side of football when we're not on the field.
We saw you on your fishing boat. I wish I had more time to fish as much as maybe you get to in the off season. But you're going largemouth there, right?
We just went out real quick to see if we can try and catch a couple largemouth over just for, you know, the show and show people that, you know, my hobby and what I love to do.
What are you using, brown worms or what do you? What
no,
you,
no, we were jigs? Using all artificial, so we were going out there with, you know, speed worms and, you know, jerk baits and top water, whatever we were trying to see what they were going to bite on.
So you had a bite on, what was it a fish or was
yeah,
it a
Yeah, no, it was a, no, it was a fish, but we think it was a big old mudfish.
Oh, so, okay.
We actually had a couple more bites. My friend was successfully able to land like two or three. I was having a hard day, but...
Have you been able to get out here at all and do some fishing in your time up here?
Yes, last time around this time I was catching a couple smallmouth because they were spawning, so they were on the beds and stuff. And then in the wintertime I was trying to catch some steelhead. Still haven't landed a steelhead successfully.
It's a little bit different fishing.
Yeah, well, I'm throwing the fly too, so it's a lot of fun.
Oh, okay.
It's a different type of fishing that I'm learning.
That takes some skill now.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
it does,
and
so.
I don't know if you've been up on Lake Ontario, but you can do some salmon fishing down there. I mean, it's like they got king salmon up there. The lake's stocked with king salmon. That's some work though.
Yeah. So me and Jake Kummerow.
Okay.
We were fishing probably around I think November, December.
Okay, that's late.
Over down in the Lower Niagara, and he caught this. I mean, I'm not really familiar when it comes to the salmon weight and everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, he caught a pretty big king salmon, and we probably chased that thing 100 yards. down the water just trying to land this fish.
Yeah, they're no joke. They're hard to land.
You get the big ones. You know, you go. They got charter guys up there that'll help you out too if you need if you need a guy. I got a guy for you, but they drop those lines out 450 yards out the back.
Yeah,
and Lake Ontario is like 1,600 feet deep. One of those lines hits on the deep lines, it's going to be a big one. Yeah. I mean, like 25, 35 pound fish.
So. Yeah, we probably caught close to that. Yeah. I mean, we were just throwing them out there, just fishing along the Lower Niagara and hooked into one.
Man, you had a high test line then. That's pretty.
No, it was a lot of fun, and I caught like two walleye, and I think one of my other buddies caught a walleye, I think, as well. But
look at you.
How long have you been back in town now since?
Since whenever the OTA day was. So
Monday or Tuesday this last week?
It was the 19th. Last week. Was the first.
The 19th, yeah. Oh, yeah. So that was the when I came in.
So what do you know, what about this this off-season program? How's it going? I know it's a lot of team building, a lot of running around in shorts and T-shirts. But
yeah, no, it's always fun to get around the guys. You haven't seen them in a while. You know, it's good to get a break after a long season, but then you go probably a month and you're like, all right, you know, time to it's ready to go back and compete again.
Is there any story behind the flex photo with Josh from the other day, or is that just there's the camera, let's just let's just rip it.
I mean, I wasn't even flexing. Josh was doing all the flexing. I was trying to – if I would have known it was going to go over all the social media, I would have made myself look a little bigger.
Yeah.
You know, Josh kind of towering over me a little bit.
That's a tough guy to be standing next to.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, but it's awesome. I'm glad that I see people took it and ran with it. I've seen some funny posts about it.
Yeah,
so
it was good. Really good. It was all in good fun, though.
How's it going to be the this transition between Brian Daboll to Ken Dorsey and those guys? How's that going?
It's going good. I mean, I feel like we're going to have a great offense. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, Ken Dorsey. He has a great past of when he played, and he was a quarterback, so you know what guys like to do like that, and we're ready to go out there and sling a little bit and have some fun.
I can't imagine what kind of runs through your head because, you know, the game you had in Kansas City was like a coming out party for you individually. I know you would have taken a win over anything like that anyway, but then you're done, and it's like, man, I was just dominating, and now I got to wait 9 months before I get to get on the how do you compartmentalize all of that? Because you find your game finally hits critical mass for everyone to see.
Yep.
And now you got to sit and wait 9 months before you can get on the field and show people again. How do you navigate that?
Well, you know, a lot of people take that game and they bring it up still now to this day.
Right.
And I'm a guy who tries to, you know, leave that alone. The past is the past. No one cares about that anymore.
Right.
It's what you're going to do, you know, now. And I try to focus on that. Would have been good to be able to keep performing that same year, of course, because, you know, getting on a streak like that as well. But, you know, I had the opportunity to show what I can do, and now I'm just ready when it starts game one to be able to show that, you know, it can be on a consistent basis. Yeah. I don't know about four touchdowns a game now.
Well, no, I know. We know.
Of course.
Let's not discount the possibility, but, yeah, the probability may be a little bit different.
Of course.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, what do you got now that you've been – a wily, salty old vet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
How has draft day changed? What are you going to be doing? You guys
going
to get together now that tomorrow night? Some of you guys got to get together and hang out, right?
We'll probably do something, hang out. I mean, especially it'll be the last day of our practice week, you know, too, as well. So definitely get the guys who stay in town. We try to hang out and do things. We go out golfing and do stuff like that. Maybe we'll head to somebody's house and, you know, turn the draft on, just hang out and play cards or something. But definitely something I'll bring up to the guys.
The big part of your draft story was after you got drafted, you went out and started running routes wherever you were. You in the backyard or something? You're out in the yard.
Yeah, so we were
running routes.
Yeah, I had my guys there, my quarterback, Mackenzie Millen, and Traquan Smith, and a couple of the other guys were there. And I know that KZ talked about earlier how he wanted to throw.
Yeah.
So we were just waiting to see when I got drafted, and then after that, we were going to throw. It wasn't a show for anybody to be able to come out there and see.
It was planned before.
It was already planned. Okay. It was already planned. So whether I got drafted that day or not, I was going to be throwing that day.
I got you.
And a lot of people think that stuff's kind of fake. But I do put a lot of work in. I do put a lot of time into the craft, and that was nothing. You know, I try to stay as humble and have humility in this game because it'll be taken from you whenever.
Yeah, we know. I mean, you're Gabe the Grinder, man. That's like that should be your nickname or something. We could probably come up with something better.
So
than
we brought you in. We brought you in because you're one of the centerpieces of this. The first episode of this Embedded for this season, and one of the things I saw in the Embedded was you have a dog. It's a French bulldog.
I have a French bulldog.
I got a French bulldog,
and I got a Bully XL pit named Jade as well.
Oh yeah, I got a pit.
Yes.
What's your Frenchie's name?
Ghost.
Oh, all right, cool. I love it.
No, he's awesome. Yeah, he's the best.
They're he was wandering across the street there.
They're hilarious.
Let's go out to traffic.
They're
the absolute quiet street.
They're the absolute funniest dog of all
they
time.
Are. Right? They are. The personalities are nuts.
They're great. So yeah, I was kind of interested to hear that. And your other one's a pit.
It's a Bully XL pit.
Bully XL pit.
Yeah, it's from actually Taiwan Jones. So he breeds. These different kind of pit bulls, and
are they larger than regular?
Yeah, they're
pits?
Larger. Yeah.
So what do they go?
I think it's an American Bulldog and a Pit Bull Terrier. Then they're mixed.
Okay.
So how big is he? She? Like
Taiwan.
60,
Taiwan's has one that is 150.
Whoa,
150 pounds.
150 pounds.
That's like bull mastiff territory.
Pit bull, yeah.
I had an old.
She had that.
We've always been until we had Vern, this Lord Frenchie. We were always big dog people. I had an old English Mastiff that was at his point. It was like 226 at his highest.
Yeah, that's
big. And it's a job.
It is. But then you get a French and you're like, oh, man, this is nothing.
Yeah. They're like a treat. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right. I would be remiss, Gabe, if I did not mention this. You are my wife's favorite player. She used to be a huge Fred Jackson guy.
Oh, okay.
So you've taken over that mantle.
Yeah, awesome.
So, yeah, I she'd kill me if I go home and I didn't mention that to you. So you are her favorite player. She loves number 13, and she's at all the home games. So
yeah, it's something I was never even my kid's favorite player. So
yeah, exactly.
Good for you. You got one, right?
Yeah, so, got one.
And then I saw you're training with a bunch of guys in the league down there. Like, you know, who do you usually cross paths with before you get back up here when you're down in Central Florida?
I'm down there, so it's usually like the UCF guys. I've been training with Latavius Murray, Traquan Smith, Mackenzie Milton.
Yep.
And then I got my homeboy, Trey Nixon, who's over in New England. You'll cross paths with a couple other guys, too, as well. But usually – and then also I got a big one, Kenny Gainwell.
Oh, yeah.
He is a big, big friend of mine and a grinder.
So he lives down there.
Yeah, he'll move down there and train me in the offseason, the running back at Philadelphia.
Okay.
And he's a worker, and he's going to be great.
Yeah.
What do you think the odds are that you, at any point in any offseason, can actually get Isaiah up to Sanford – from Miami, what would you lay the odds at? Because you were trying.
I was trying, man. I try to get these guys to come out and train. I'm confident in the work that we do, and I trust in what I the process, and I know my process is good, and I want to be able to bring as much guys as I can around because it always makes it better to have guys to compete with, and also to have guys just to get better with and bond with.
Last one for me before I let you go. You've been through these off-season, these OTAs and mini camps before. What has Sean McDermott's message this year, at the earliest stage of this year, coming in with the expectations of the club so high, what's his message been and how is it different?
We just have to focus on what we can control. And the biggest thing for us is we know we're just that one step away from going where we want to go. And we just have to take that in our own hands and be able to, do what we need to do in order to get what we want to get. I know the biggest thing in OTAs was this is bonding with the guys. I mean, I feel like the closer you are, the more you want to fight on that field and win for your brothers, and that's what we need to do.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Gabe, look, it's Gabe, great thanks, to have you in studio.
Yeah.
It's great to see faces up close and personal again. So good
exactly.
to have you in. Thanks for
it's
stopping by. We'll be sure to make sure everybody's watching that embedded series because you and Isaiah on the phone, that's entertainment, man.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Yeah,
so thanks very much for the time. We appreciate
it.
Thanks. And good luck through the rest of the OTAs and minicamp. We'll see you at training camp. That's Gabe Davis joining us here on One Bills Live. We're back with more in a moment. We'll see you. Stay tuned. One last thing we wanted to remind you, so that Buffalo Bills Embedded Episode 1, Reset, Refocus, Respond, it premieres tonight. You can find it on the Bills YouTube channel. It goes up at 7 p.m. this evening, so be sure to check it out. The interplay between Gabriel Davis and Isaiah McKenzie on the phone alone.
Yeah,
enough to watch it. Those two guys, they go back and forth.
It's so reminiscent.
It's like Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah,
Abbott and Costello.
When you're in the locker room with these guys, you can imagine, and it really is one of those stereotypes that's proven to be true. You get on the phone you get in the locker room, and there's nothing that's off limits or out of bounds to be talked about. And it's that same kind of attitude that these two do. They absolutely abuse each other, and
it's fun.
It's like nothing. They don't even. It doesn't even register on their I'm hurt meter. You know, it's like they just keep going.
Yeah,
and It's a lot of fun. It's pretty reminiscent of all the days that I spent in the locker room, and then to see these guys acting like, you know, it's good. And we never had FaceTime or anything like that.
No.
Back in the day. It's pretty fun. Pretty yeah. good. It's a great way to stay in touch, obviously. It's the best way yet. And it's a good way. And like you said, this offseason and this time of year and this kind of thing, you can keep the teamwork rolling. You know, you can kind of build teamwork and build yeah. camaraderie even when you're not in the same building. It's a great, great tool.
Also featured in that episode is Dawson Knox. As the crew went down to Nashville, where he lives in the offseason as well, they spent some time with him too. So Dawson Knox, Isaiah McKenzie, Gabriel Davis, all featured in this episode of Embedded. Once again, airing tonight on the Bills YouTube channel at 7 p.m. So be sure to check it out there. Wanted to take a quick phone call here before we had to go to break. And it's Tyler waiting for us in North Carolina. What do you got for us, Tyler? Tyler, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now.
There you go.
Okay. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. What you got for us?
All right, so I had a couple questions. One, I was wondering what you guys see as far as the biggest difference between the regime and the front office that we have now compared to what we had in the regime back when Buddy Nix and Doug Whaley were the general managers. It's just a clear night and day thing, but I can't put my finger on, like, what is it that they were doing that seemed to be wrong compared to what Brandon Bean is doing now that has worked, like, turned so many things around. So I was hoping you guys could explain that. And my second question is there, with all of this stuff, all of this talk going on with the draft and the Bills, who they're going to get at 25, is there anyone that you can see where the Bills might be interested in trading up for? I know me personally, I'm a big, Derek Stingley. I've been a Derek Stingley fan since he was a freshman at LSU, and I would love to see the Bills trade up to get him. But yeah, those are my questions. What do you guys think?
All right. Thanks, Tyler.
It depends, Tyler, depends on how far up they have to go. I doubt that they're going to trade up too far, although they're going to have some takers, some guys acquiring, but they're going to be so high. Yeah. And you're going to have to pay. If teams are desperate to get out of the top 10 and you get a top 10 mm-hmm. pick for less than another first round and whatever else goes with it, it depends on what you got to give up. I don't think too many teams are going to be giving up draft picks to get up a few rounds because there's not going to be that much difference between, you know, these picks.
Yeah. Stingley is a top 10 pick. He's probably going to go in the top 10. I don't see him getting anywhere past 12. And I think the cost of getting up that high from 25 is too rich for Buffalo. So I don't know if Stingley is going to be in play for the Bills because the cost is just going to be too exorbitant for Brandon Bean to entertain.
Right. And I don't know that there's any. But now, there's probably more than one guy they would love to have and maybe trade up to get, but they're not going to pay the price to do it because they draft so well that even if they sit where they're at, they're going to get a good player.
If they do decide to move up, I'd be really surprised if they move any higher than Pittsburgh at 20. We're talking like a handful of picks, I think, maximum for somebody they like really like who's somehow slid down the board. That's the only way I could see them going up, and I don't see them going up higher than 20 to Pittsburgh. Yeah.
As for your other question about what's different about this front office, I don't think it's a simple question. I think this is a pretty complex, but I'll say this. It starts at the very tippy top. It starts with Terry and Kim. The way they run things, the freedom and the empowerment they give to Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. Now, Brandon and Sean have earned a long leash for the way they've handled everything, but it starts with Terry and Kim and the way they run the show. That's one reason that the team's more successful on the field. You never saw even the Mario Williams thing a few years, you know, back in the day. It was rare that you saw the Bills be able to make a deal like a Von Miller deal this year and also extend, you know, the guys they've extended, you know, the Josh Allen deal, all these, you know, you got to have cash flow. And Terry and Kim's willingness to write those checks and kick it down the road, as well as on draft day, listening to the guys who do the film work and giving them leeway to, okay, go ahead. You know, a lot is in that. But it all starts at the very tippy top and hiring the right people and then trusting them to do the right thing. And then there's a million moving parts after that as well. But you can lay the success of the franchise right at the feet of ownership and their willingness to hire the right people and trust them.
And I would just say the other difference is Doug Whaley was GM here for essentially four seasons, had two head coaches, a bunch of different assistant coaches, and was still in that drought period where there was constant churn with coaching staffs, rosters. You're always retooling the roster. There's no continuity to build on the previous year and then build on top of that. When McDermott and Bean came in, there was a clear vision, and they were given time to execute that vision. And there was patience. There was continuity. There were also a lot of good decisions made.
Yeah.
But the fact that they could finally lay a foundation, then build on that foundation without having to change it here, there, and everywhere again and again and again, lends itself to building it to where it is now.
For a long time, when Russ Brannon was the president for a lot of years, one thing they constantly struggled with was hiring the right people at head coach and GM and all that. And one of the reasons they struggled to do that wasn't that they weren't willing to interview them or hire them or even pay them. It was they were getting them to say yes. As much as I loved Ralph Wilson and owe a lot to him, when I left here in 1997, he was almost 80.
Yeah, he's getting on in years.
He was almost 80, and that was considered an unstable ownership situation for a lot of head coaching camps. They didn't want to come take the job and have the owner pass away or have an ownership change and then be stuck here and then be out and without ever getting a chance. That went on from the time Ralph was 80 until he passed away at 95.
Right.
There were head coaches who were like, you know, I mean, quality. I've had a couple of them tell me the story years later. Yeah,
they viewed it as untenable.
They viewed it as a bad spot just because, not that Ralph was a bad guy or a bad person, but he was frail. That was an issue for a long, long time because, you know, Ralph was the owner from the very beginning, and it wasn't going to change until he was gone, and nobody knew when that was going to be. So that was a real problem for the last decade and a half of the franchise under Ralph's ownership.
Break time for us here, but when we come back, it is the final mock draft watch. Bills reporter Maddie Glad will be joining us as she has compiled the final list of the most popular player and position picks for the Bills at 25. What does the majority of all the mocks say? We find out next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, hour number two. And what better thing to do the day before the draft than to list the final edition of Mock Draft Watch. Actually, there is another one still to come on BuffaloBills.com. But here is the person that has been diligently compiling and crunching the numbers and the names of those players mocked to the Bills at pick 25. It is our colleague and good friend, Maddie Glab, joining us here. And, Maddie, it looks like, based on the list you have, there is a true consensus player.
Yeah.
That is far and away.
I was going to say, he's above a lot of other guys.
This is like Secretariat.
There's only
in the Belmont. Way out in front of everybody else.
And then there's always one. There's one guy close to him, but not that. You know what I mean?
Not that close.
This guy, the first guy was mocked 22 times to the Bills. And the other guy was 17 times. Nobody else has more than 10. Has even 10.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, one's got 17, one's got 22. Okay, tell us.
So I went through and compiled because at this point, and I've updated this list again because we're going to have one more mock draft come out tomorrow. So all these numbers that we'll give you right now are updated and a little bit different than what may be on BuffaloBills.com. But I have tracked 144 mock drafts. I'm going to do a couple more probably this afternoon and some more tomorrow morning before our final mock draft watch comes out. But of those 144, we made a top eight prospects list. So the prospects who are mocked to the Buffalo Bills the most, and also gave you a top positions mock to the Buffalo Bills at number 25. So the guy who was above everybody else by double digits is Andrew Booth Jr. out of Clemson. One of the most recent mock drafts I tracked had him again. So he has now been mocked to the Buffalo Bills 23 times since January.
Yeah.
All right.
And he's number 23. How about that?
Whoa. Riding on the wall.
Well, no, but I mean, the thing, and we've had several draft analysts on the show, as you would imagine, Maddie, over the last month or so, and everybody from former NFL GMs to guys that follow the draft and watch college football and do nothing else and grade players, most of them are of the opinion that he is an excellent scheme fit for what the Bills do. Now, some people have said this guy has as versatile a skill set as you could ask for from a corner, so he could technically fit in just about any scheme. Mm-hmm. But for what the Bills do, a lot of these guys believe he is unquestionably a fit with a capital F.
And when you hear so many analysts talk about him in that way, and somebody who could fit with the Buffalo Bills, but could also probably fit in with a lot of other teams, you wonder, when is the run on corners going to start? Is he even going to be available at number 25? And in the commercial break, we were talking about the worst thing would be to get to number 25, and the cream of the crop, at least who we're thinking is the cream of the crop, isn't available anymore.
Yeah, and it's been our consensus. I don't know what you think, Matty. We're going to ask you right now. We think, you know, cornerback or wide receiver are kind of the top thing, because, you know, you got Josh, you want to, you know, give him another weapon, get some depth there, somebody who can really play or somebody who can even contribute. And, of course, corner for both quality and depth, that seems like, you know, the most likely position group that the Bills would draft from at 25. But 25 is a big number.
Yeah, you're waiting a while.
If the run starts on either one or both of those position groups, they run out pretty quick.
Yeah,
have to make a move.
Of the 144 mock drafts we've tracked, cornerback has been mocked to the Buffalo Bills, and all combined corner and defensive back have been mocked to the Buffalo Bills 69 times. So that is a huge number.
No
a lot of people
there.
Think we're going to draft a cornerback. Is that going to be the case? We'll see.
I'll go out on him and say we're not going to draft a fullback.
I think what I do wonder, because we just took a call right before the break, from Tyler, who was saying, you know, who would they trade up for? And it makes me think, if there is that run on corners and they see a gigantic drop-off after the fourth or fifth corner on their board to, like, round three. Mm-hmm. Remember we had Mark Dominic on our podcast, Bills by the Numbers. He sees a giant drop-off on his board after Booth. He said, after Booth, there is a drop-off there. Right. He goes, and I don't know if I feel good about anybody until round three. I was like, round three? What? Like, now that's one guy's opinion.
Right.
But that, like, that sent shudders through my body. Like, we got to wait till round three now? I hope not.
It's interesting, too, because at corner, you get that kind of drop-off. At wide out, you just get different skill sets.
Yeah, what type of wide receiver do you want?
Pick your flavor.
They don't drop off. They just change. Mm-hmm. And you can get a lot of production, but you have to play the guy in the slot rather than outside, or, you know, that kind of thing. So it's different for wideouts. I think more guys can be pushed up there just because they have some traits. Whereas corner, that doesn't happen. You can either and then it's like, I don't know. It's none of that gradient like there is in wide receiver.
So, Maddie, who was the most – let's look at that other position that we think they could gravitate towards. Who was the most popular wide receiver mock to the Bills?
So there's like there needs to be an asterisk next to this player's name, because the most popular wide receiver was Jameson Williams. Ugh. But he was going off the board in the late first round.
Yeah, back in January.
Back in January and February. And then you started to see the videos get posted and the updates about he's on time. Now ACL injuries aren't as crazy as they used to be because of the technology today. He's going to be ready to go when we think he's going to be ready to go. So now Jameson Williams is not being mocked to Buffalo at all. I think the last time Jameson Williams was mocked to the Buffalo Bills might have been in March at some point.
Right, that's what I was going to say.
He's not even going to be on the board past 12 or 14.
Yeah, he may be a top 10 pick. I mean, so, he was projected, for those of people who don't keep track of it, this guy was projected to be the, maybe a top five pick, maybe the first wide receiver taken.
He's
got
the best
hurt.
Wide receiver in the draft class.
He got
a lot
hurt
of people call him.
And was injured at the end of the season. So, you know,
yeah,
that's
the national
that's
championship
issue.
Game.
Right.
So besides Jameson Williams, the second
wide receiver
who's been mocked to the Buffalo Bills the most is, I believe it's Jahan Dotson.
Oh, Dotson. I like Dotson.
Yeah.
So Jahan Dotson and Treylon Burks are like right there with each other.
Burks is
Treylon
tricky
Burks
for
from
me.
Arkansas, yeah.
Burks is tricky for me, and there seems to be a little bit of a range of opinion on him. Some people think he's dynamic and he's going to be unbelievable, and there's other people that say, a lot of contested catches in college. Is he going to be able to get open in the pros? And I was surprised to see the mix of opinion on him. Some people see him as an outright world beater, and other people are like, I don't know. So it's going to be very interesting to see where guys like that go. Because as we know, it only takes one team to love the guy, and suddenly he's off the board at 18, and it's like, how the heck did that happen? He went even earlier than we thought. But like a team like the Saints could easily take him at 18.
Very true. Right. Treylon Burks was mocked to the Buffalo Bills 6 times, and Jahan Dotson was mocked to the Buffalo Bills 5 times. So they're really close to each other in the amount of times that people have chosen them to go to Buffalo with that 25th overall pick. And if you go back to corners, defensive backs, number 2 next to Andrew Booth Jr. is Trent McDuffie. He's been mocked to the Buffalo Bills 18 times now, according to the latest ones that I've tracked.
Right.
So and that's a guy who was being mocked higher in the draft in the early
going. And now he's kind of fell.
Now people are wondering, he might actually be there for the Bills, because I think the knock on him is he's not a long athlete.
Just
and a lot
arms.
Of teams are looking for longer, taller corners.
Which you have a lot of longer, taller corners that will go early on. This is what this draft class is. But a lot of people have said don't knock him because of his length. This is still a really talented defensive
back.
He's
kind of built like a Taron Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Not like a Levi Wallace who's taller and
That's
longer
right.
or something like
That's
that.
That's exactly right.
But he can play outside, which is saying something, knowing he's not tall or long.
And it's not he's got short arms.
Yeah, he does.
They're under 30 inches long. And you can say, I don't know. And teams do this. Guys with arms that short, it's a very short list of guys with those physical traits that have had even a moderately successful NFL career.
Yeah, but you got to be careful not to talk yourself out of a player that can play. Like, if you think they have the tools.
He's a physical corner.
I mean, he hits, he supports the run, makes plays on the ball. He just doesn't have all the elite measurables. But a kid can run. I can look up his 40 time for
He's definitely one of my favorites to watch. That was one of the cornerbacks that if he comes to Buffalo, I would be really excited to have him just because of the skill set that he does have, because of what people say about him. I think he could fit well here, but I think a lot of corners could fit well here depending on what type of corner you want to go after. There's certainly a good amount that could go in the first round that will have an impact on whatever team they get drafted by. And then besides corner and wide receiver, interior offensive line was the number 3 position for the Bills, being mocked to the Bills at number 25. And the most popular prospect was Zion Johnson, being mocked to the Buffalo Bills 8 different times.
I do think that they should get an interior offensive lineman at some point in the draft. I'm just hard. Steve and I were having this discussion earlier this week. It's very hard for me to justify it in round one, only because you have the so-called premier positions, you know, quarterback, pass rusher, wide receiver, corner, offensive tackle. And I think you should, more often than not, provided the value is right on your board, gravitate towards those positions at the top of the draft. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the guard class goes deep into the 5th round. But I think you could get a decent interior offensive lineman somewhere on day 2 and still be okay. And so I would be apt to try to steer clear of that if possible, especially if there's something better on the board at corner or receiver, something like that. And I think this is where that whole running back conversation comes in, because I think there are some that believe, well, if the cornerback value stinks and the wide receiver value stinks when they're on the board at 25, are you going to take an interior offensive lineman? Does that guy get you over the hump and win a Super Bowl? Or do you take another skill position player and draft a running back? I think that's how people are getting to running back in some of the mocks that Maddie's been talking
about. Yeah, the latest mock draft watch that you guys are going to see tomorrow morning, I've tracked the bulk of them already yesterday and today, and the new hot name for Buffalo is Breece Hall at number 25. I've also seen him going to the Buffalo Bills in the second round, too, with the 57th overall pick. I don't know if he'll last
probably
to number
not.
57. But yeah, he's been the new hot name there at number 25. Another guy who I've seen pop up that I really haven't seen since January, February, Devontae Wyatt, the defensive tackle out of Georgia.
You can sign me up for that guy.
Right?
Yeah. I like him a lot.
He won't be there at 25, I don't think.
A lot of people have him going to the Steelers at 20. They need defensive line help badly because they got Tyson Alualu, who's 35, and they've got Cameron Hayward, who's 33, and J.J. Watt. Or not J.J. Watt, T.J. Watt.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only guy under 30 on their starting defensive. They need help there, bad.
This Wyatt is a high motor, fast athlete who weighs about three bills and who makes plays everywhere. So, and he played on that Georgia front with all of those guys. No
huge
question about
guys.
It. But he's, I'm with you.
I think he's a special talent.
We'll see. I don't think he'll. In fact, I think he'll probably. I think he goes before Davis does, Jordan Davis.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah,
I think he does offer more.
I think there's no question Jordan Davis is a game wrecker in the run game. I don't know what else he's going to give you, but.
Well, if you had a run defense that was ranked like 28th or 29th,
Jordan Davis
would be drafting that guy.
Listen, Jordan, if you do, it's true, and I'll say this. He's a Ted Washington type guy.
Mm-hmm.
If he's on your team, you're going to be a top five run defense. That's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're just not going to be able to do anything but have two guys on him throughout the entire play. They won't be able to leave him, and they can't move
Which
him.
Means one-on-ones for everybody else.
Everybody's on one-on-ones, and in the NFL, that's all it takes. That guy is Ted Washington incarnate, and that's a – that's a pretty good guy to have on your squad.
It's high praise for sure.
Devontae Wyatt is actually next to Zion Johnson out of the latest mock drafts, also being mocked to the Buffalo Bills eight times. And a bulk of those happened early on when the mock drafts first started to come out. Another name that I've seen a couple times and who we haven't seen a lot of is the linebacker Devin Lloyd out of Utah. He's been mocked to the Buffalo Bills now four different times.
Interesting, because I think – you know, we hear that this time of year is called the lying season, and usually that stuff comes from the agent world, and some people are trying to pump up medical concerns about some of his injuries, and they're somebody is trying to push him down the board. Usually it's somebody that also has a linebacker as a client who wants their guy to be the first linebacker drafted.
Right.
I don't know that, but sometimes that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But look, the only people that get fooled by that stuff are people in our line of work. The NFL GMs and the college scouting directors, they do their homework three and four times over. And even when that stuff surfaces, they have somebody they can lob a phone call to and verify it or invalidate it. So if it's true and there are concerns about his injury to the point where some medical staffs for some NFL teams have a problem with it, well, yeah, maybe he does slide.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's purely a lot of puffing stuff, you know, nobody's buying
it. We had this conversation also about Devin Lloyd in relationship to N'Kobe Dean at the Georgia linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Dean being that smart guy, but he's short and slow and light. I mean, he's a small guy, but he's really smart, and he played on a great defense and ran the show. But then you've got this guy, Devin Lloyd, who has got all of it. I mean, he's like big, strong, fast, physical kind of guy. And the balance in a NFL draft, in a college draft, you take N'Kobe Dean. In an NFL draft, I think you take Lloyd.
Yeah, he's your do-it-all type of linebacker. He fits in today's NFL defenses that you need with the way the league is going, with the way that quarterbacks are throwing the ball and also running the ball, with the type of different wide receivers you're seeing, what tight ends are doing. You need a linebacker like Devin Lloyd on your team to be able to stop some of those NFL offenses that can get you in several different ways.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. But there's a ton – these mock drafts, and I love how you've compiled all the numbers so you can see how many people think it's going to go. But you can still take your pick. I mean
– yeah, we've got a spreadsheet over here with all the numbers of the different guys, the different positions, and then also all the names with the dates starting back in January.
So corner was the most popular position, obviously. Was wide receiver second, or was it something else?
Wide receiver was second. Wide receiver was mocked to the Buffalo Bills 21 times.
Okay.
Interior offensive lineman was next at 15 times. These are updated numbers now. And then next to that, I want to say, was running back and defensive line were close with each other.
I think we've talked about this on the show, I think the sneaky need for Buffalo is linebacker, because we don't know what the future holds for Tremaine Edmonds, knowing he's entering his fifth-year option year here and is scheduled to become a free agent next year. They've got other people whose contracts are up too, Dawson Knox, Devin Singletary. Ed Oliver has another year, so they bought some time there after picking up the fifth-year option yesterday. So that might help the cause in getting Edmonds back in the fold. But if they take a linebacker early, you wonder if it's a sign like, we better get a guy in the pipeline in case we can't. And there's some really good second-round value at linebacker. I'm not saying they're going to go there, but the value might point them in that direction.
I'll say this. You know this for sure. Of the guys on your lists that we've got, all the way from all the wide receivers, the corners, the defensive tackles, and the linebackers, and the interior offensive linemen, somebody on this list is going to be a Buffalo Bill.
Yeah. Yep, that's what
somebody
I said last time.
Somebody on that
time.
List is somebody, going to be on our team.
The name is on this list.
That's right.
Somewhere. Who is it? I have no idea.
Well,
I
would
wait.
Think after 144 mock drafts, somebody hit the
got
target.
It, right.
Right. But that's what
it's
going to be.
It's not going to be Jameson Williams, though.
No.
Probably not.
He's going to be gone.
It's probably not going to be Jordan Davis.
Nope.
It's probably
not going to be Devontae Wyatt. Right?
Probably not.
If I can think back to last year, I'll come on after the draft and we'll have a fun segment of, okay, who is the first person to get it right for Buffalo? And thinking back to last year with Greg Rousseau, I think one or two people had mocked him to the Buffalo Bills in early February. And then we really didn't see much of Greg Rousseau until we hit April. And then he was not a popular name. He wasn't as popular as Andrew Booth Jr. is right now to the Bills. But we did see his name pop up a bit.
All right. So you had one guy, this Andrew Booth was like over 20 times. Then you had McDuffie 17. Then everybody else was right around 10. The high ones were like right around 10.
Yeah. Yep, Jameson Williams.
Yeah, single digits. And it was
Kyler Gordon is
now
at 10 times.
The interior offensive line, the DBs and corners were off the charts the most. And then wide receivers. So if you're going to do it that way, it's going to be a DB or a wide receiver. Who's it going to be?
We should remind everybody that Maddie and myself will be doing our live reaction draft stream on draft night one, and on night two as well. We'll be streaming those on the Bills Facebook page, the YouTube channel, on Twitter. So right after the Bills pick is made on night one, Maddie and I will jump on and give you instant reaction. And if Brandon Bean addresses the media, we'll carry that as well. We'll do the same thing for the day two picks in round two. And round three, after Kyle Brandt does God knows what in announcing the Bills pick at 89.
It's going to be exciting, whatever he does. And then we'll also have Greg Cosell will join us after the picks, too. So it'll be awesome to have Greg Cosell of NFL Films on with us, because we know he knows these prospects, unlike a lot of people out there.
That's true, too. There's some of these things we haven't really talked about. A guy like Daxton Hill, who's a defensive back, who's a safety.
He's been
kind
a popular name for the Bills, too. He's
up
there.
He's a dark horse pick.
If you're going to draft depth, depth means not only depth, it also means versatility. Like an offensive lineman can play guard or tackle or guard or center.
We were talking about him
yesterday. Daxton Hill could play corner and safety.
Or nickel.
And he's an athlete. kind of a hybrid athletic guy who could play a couple of different spots. So if you're doing it for depth, even in the first round, man, that guy really smells like it to me. That guy's got a spot.
He can scoot, too.
Yeah.
You
know, he's been mocked to the Bills 3-7. Six times. He's been mocked to Buffalo at number 25.
I think Mel Kiper had him there in his latest mock draft. He thinks he's a fit for them.
Yep.
He's certainly versatile. I don't think there's any question about that. And we know that this team likes position flexibility on offense. I'm sure they like it on defense, too.
Yeah, and for all that we've talked about and the lack of weakness on the roster – certainly, I mean, and here's what we don't know: how the board falls up to 20 through 24 picks, and how those picks affect what the Bills think. Who's there and who really is there? Who has fallen through the cracks at DB? Who has fallen through the cracks at defensive line, at offensive line, a wide receiver? Who's dropped? And is that one of the guys they like? I mean, that's what we don't know.
Yeah.
That's what we don't know.
Maddie, thanks for putting all of that together. We know it's
my
tedious.
My pleasure. I enjoy doing it.
People love it, as we know, and they're always checking it out. I actually have listeners tweet at me saying, hey, can you tweet the latest mock draft out? I'm happy to do it, but you can go to BuffaloBills.com on your phone. Yes. If you have the Bills app,
Maddie,
just pull up the story.
Folks, Maddie is on the payroll. She does this.
I do it for
go
a living.
Find her.
Yeah. The top 8 prospects. You can find it on BuffaloBills.com.
Yeah.
Came out a couple days ago. Brownie has an article that dropped today. We've got a bunch of pre-draft stuff that's on our website. We'll have one final mock draft watch up tomorrow.
And I'm setting up my watch party.
Yeah, your zero gravity chair.
I am all
your whiskey and your cigar. We know
how it works. The outdoor TV.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Might be a little brisk Thursday night.
I thought it was going to be really brisk, but it's not going to be that bad.
Your winter camping gear again?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I got all that set up. So, yeah, we're all going to be in it together, except you'll be in
it more
than
me. Send us a picture.
We want some photos.
You'll be in it more than me.
I'll be
with you in spirit.
Yeah.
Let me just put it that way.
Drinking a spirit.
At 11:15 p.m. at night when the pick's made.
Drinking spirits,
awesome.
For sure. Maddie, thanks again. I will catch up with you tomorrow.
Yep.
And you can catch up with us on Facebook Live, Twitter, and on the Bills YouTube channel when we stream after each of the first three Bills picks. So be sure to check that out on draft nights 1 and 2. We will take a break. Steve and I are back with more, including a very necessary commentary on the state of defense in the Pac-12 conference. We will get to that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, as we mentioned before the break, I feel compelled to address this.
Okay.
The Pac-12 conference has hit an all-time low in defensive football.
Oof.
I think there is a general belief that defensive football is lacking in the Pac-12 as a whole. There are a couple of exceptions. But in general, the Pac-12 is not known for defensive football. And I meant to ask Brandon Bean this on the show yesterday, in terms of how much more challenging does it make the evals on offensive players when the defensive play in their conference is just subpar? Like, how do you weigh that when you're evaluating a prospect? But in any event, I'm watching some film yesterday and today of UCLA tight end Greg Dulcich, maybe the best run after catch tight end in the class this year. And I see clips of 3 blown coverages in a row. Then there are times where the defense simply forgets about him. It's uncanny. Steve, Dulcich is catching the ball. He's the only guy in the camera shot.
Yeah.
Like, on a field with 22 moving players, he is all by himself with nothing but green grass around him.
I'm sitting
for
at my 10 desk.
Yards in any direction.
We did this. We talked about this earlier. I'm sitting at my desk. Brownie's over there yelling at his computer. I'm like, what's the problem? He goes, look at that. And I go over there, and sure enough, this guy's running right. He's a nice tight end, has some nice highlights. And, you know, not all of them are like this, but every once in a while, it's like he's on a green screen. He's by himself.
Here's the thing. It's not like this guy is, you know, some sixth rounder or a priority free agent. This guy was the leading. He's a tight end. He was the leading receiver on UCLA's roster. He had 1,300 yards receiving and like 8 touchdowns. How do you forget about that guy in the UCLA offense? Now, look, I'll be the first to say, I don't catch a lot of Pac-12 football. It's on too late on Saturday, and as you know, we work long days on Sundays in the fall. But the more I've watched film on offensive prospects from the Pac-12, the more I am seeing just how bad it has gotten out there. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't good individual defensive prospects in this year's draft class from the Pac-12. There absolutely are. Kayvon Thibodeau is the, you know, he's going to go in the top five.
Yeah, there's some talented
guys. But I was just amazed at the lack. Do you have a theory on why the defensive cohesion as a unit by a lot of those teams, the blown assignments, the poor technique? I mean, I'm not even a trained eye, Steve, you know, like the pro scouts are. But it doesn't take a pro scout to realize there is no consistent defense of any kind as a unit in that conference.
Yeah, and that's
it's
interesting
terrible.
Because you can sit here and wax philosophic about what the reasons are, and I can't begin to. It's a complex issue because it's like not just like one team. It's like the whole roster of schools. You show up and they're getting rung up every weekend. And I don't know whether it's like all the really good athletes want to carry the ball and the guys that play defense are the leftovers athletically. But you're right. I mean, it's blown coverage. It's blown coverage. And then there's a guy, he just can't stay with a guy.
It's Power 5 conference football.
I'm with you. There really does seem to be this. And I you always heard it when we were growing up, too, when I was coming up through the ranks as well. Like, you know, Pac-12 against, you know, Big Ten. The Big Ten was 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Yeah. There's some truth to it. But now, that's all changed. The Pac-12 is now just aired out. There are offensive linemen coming into the league now, and not only at Pac-12, but they've never had their hand on the ground. You know what I mean? They're in a two-point stance as a guard all the time because they're doing nothing but pass protecting. There's no run games. It's all throwing. And when you do that, it's just, you know, they lack a physicality and they just don't learn certain things. So here, and I don't want to say this is bad coaching because they don't play defense, but what coaches do learn is, listen, this is what our guys do. We're going to do it. We're going to do what we do best offensively. And they never ask these guys to do that. And it's the same, got to be the same defensively. We can't ask our guys to play man-to-man because they just can't hang in there with these guys. Or if they do play man-to-man, they're just getting rung up. And I always make the joke about the talented players, you know, like a Jameson Williams or, you know, all the guys in the top of this draft and every draft, you know, every other week they're playing against a dental student or an accounting student.
But here's
and that, you know, they take advantage.
Here's the problem with how bad the defense.
But that's not what this is.
No. And here's the problem with how bad the defense is in the Pac-12. It's going to be harder and harder for coaches to make it better because with the transfer portal rules now, you got guys coming in and going out. It's a revolving door. Forget about the guys that leave early for the draft. Now you got guys leaving because they didn't like what you told them in practice last week.
Right.
And I'm out of here. I'm going in the transfer portal. I'm going to go play somewhere else. And then you got to recruit 12 new guys.
Yeah, I'll say this, though. I don't think football lends itself to that kind of switching up the way basketball does.
Well, yeah, because you only got 5 guys on the floor.
Yeah, it's not as complicated, even at the high levels. So I don't think that's going to, like, decimate rosters the way it has in the past. It will, because here's the thing.
It will impact continuity, though.
The guys that are playing don't transfer.
Yeah, that's true.
The guys that are playing don't train, at least in football at this current point in history, it's not as common. If you're not playing, that's when you get out. That's when these guys go to, like, I'm going to leave in Georgia and I'm going to go to UCF, or I'm going to go to Ole Miss, or I'm going to go to someplace where I can get on the field, right? That's the thing now with football players. Then you get guys at Georgia who, if they're willing to sit there, they'll wait their turn and get on their senior year and then take their chances in the draft. And a lot of these guys are really looking good doing it.
There is some news regarding the draft and trade possibilities. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler is saying, as far as the trade front goes, the Giants at pick 7, that's the second of their 2 picks, they're at 5 and 7, The Giants at 7 have received calls from teams about potentially trading into that spot. And the Seahawks at number 9 have had some preliminary interest in their pick. But the general consensus from many teams is they expect movement to occur after the top 10. The 11 to 14 range is anticipated to be the sweet spot.
Yeah, we've suspected that.
Less of a premium to get there.
Right. You're going to have teams that say, listen, that, well, because you got the Jets have two picks. The Giants have two picks. If they really want
in the
a
top
guy.
Top 10.
Yeah, they can. If they really want a guy, they're going to get him. And chances are the guys they want are the guys everybody else wants too, and nobody wants to, you know. Now, if it gets by the Jets' first pick and then the Giants' first pick, that pick number 6, which is behind both of those first two picks of the Giants and Jets, then you think, okay, we got a chance to get up to that. But that's going to be from somebody who's got, like, the 10th pick, you know.
Yeah, because it's big-time capital to get up there.
You cannot get from Buffalo's 25 to number 6 and – justify everything. You'd have to give your whole draft up.
Yeah. And the general,
and you're not going to do that.
Yeah, and the general feeling is, with this draft lacking true elite players, there's no need to go up there. That's why this 11 to 14 range is suddenly attractive, because now you can get a player that might be as good as some of those guys taken in the top 10, because there are no true elites, and you can get them at a lower cost in terms of the capital you got to give up to get up there.
You miss that guy in the top 10. The guy you get at 25 is going to give you a lot closer to what that top 10 guy is than other drafts in the past. There's not going to be that big a discrepancy between a top 10 player in this draft and a mid-20s player in this draft at the same position. That's the thought process we're talking about here.
Be interesting to see what Houston does. They have picks 3 and 13. So their second pick is in that sweet spot range. Do they make their pick at 3 if they can get one of the top 3 pass rushers, conceivably? Otherwise, they get the best tackle in the draft. And then at 13, does somebody make an offer to them where they say, you know what, I'm going to take that. Give me the extra draft capital.
Right, and what's it going to be? Is it going to be 2 twos or a 2 and a 3?
Or is it going to be a 1 and a 3?
Right, a 25 and a 2, a 1 and a 2 for that 13th pick.
Yeah,
I kind of doubt that. That's a lot of.
I think a team that's moving up to 13 is someone that's somewhere between 16 and 20. You know what I mean?
Right. So you flip those picks and you throw in what?
An extra 3?
3? That this year's 3? It's got to be this year's 3. If you're Houston, you're not going to take next year's 3.
No, you want to get
I got to need it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? But so that's a lot of draft capital.
I think there's going to be some boards where some guys that were on their board in the top 10 don't go in the top 10. They're suddenly like, "Oh my god, there's a top 10 guy there. I'm going to go get him." You know, and they move up to somewhere between 11 and 14 do it. We can talk around and around and around about it,
which
is what makes the draft so great. We got to take a break, though. Steve and I to close things up when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back. It's One Bills Live. And tomorrow at this time, Steve, we will be a mere 5 hours away from the opening of the 2022 NFL draft.
Just the beautiful music of the boos as Roger goes up to the mic. Even the Vegas people are going to boo him. They got no reason to boo him. They're going to boo him.
I think he's going to love
the sense of normalcy. He'll smile. He'll
love
it.
The draft was in Cleveland last year, and that was a little dicey. With the weather and the stage, which you had a major issue with because
the
poor players had to walk about a quarter mile just to get up to the podium.
Took forever for those guys to get there.
The next pick was already in by the time the guy was getting his jersey and taking photos with the commissioner.
The team was running with their pick up to the thing because it took them so long to get up there.
I wonder how much tighter security is going to be this year. You remember that Browns fan that got up on the catwalk last year?
Oh, I don't remember.
Random dude. What did he have? Did he have a banjo? What did he have with him? He had some kind of. I can't remember now. What the heck did he have with him up there?
I would think
it was
Vegas
right when Machine Gun Kelly was addressing the crowd because he's a Browns fan,
right?
And so he was talking about the Browns going to the Super Bowl, and I can't remember if he announced a pick or something, And as he's walking off, there's this random dude up on the stage who is not part of the event at all. He hopped up on there, and security didn't get him for a while. Somebody's got to help me with that.
Yeah, the league does nothing but if it doesn't learn from its mistakes.
Yeah.
That's a mistake that won't happen. You got to know that the casinos know what security's all about. They'll
oh, yeah.
They'll
fix the guy him will up be in the fountain in 3 seconds.
They'll fix him up.
One thing to remind you, if you need a draft fix between now and tomorrow, we have a story up on BuffaloBills.com right now. 8 things to watch for the Bills in the 2022 NFL draft. The way certain things could happen, what other teams could do that could impact Buffalo. Give it a read when you get a chance. We have expert analysis there for you to chew on as you wait for the draft tomorrow. Steve and I are back here tomorrow as we will get you set for round numero uno, the latest rumors and reports on what could happen in round one of the 2022 NFL draft. We'll see you at 1:00.